Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time.
So, as I mentioned to you last hour and earlier in the show, City Council in Pensacola tonight has there's a handful of things on the agenda that are kind of interesting. One, as we've been talking about extensively for quite some time, is this. They're calling it a gun buyback, but as people rightly point out on our Facebook page every time we post about it, you can't buy back something you never owned in the first place. So it's a gun purchase program. I have a lot of questions about this program, and I'm not a supporter, but the mayor keeps saying, and Delarian Wiggins, city councilman who proposed it, says the people in their neighborhood want this, and so, okay. I think, you know, I settled Tuesday with Chip Simmons, sheriff. I said, look, if they called it an educational program that would also allow people to sell a gun or two, I don't think I'd mind that as much. But nevertheless, I think that's going to pass. I don't think it's going to be much of a controversy there. I don't think people are all that smart if they sell a semi-automatic rifle for $200, but, you know, okay, we'll see what happens. I'm always curious, even with the thing I disagree with. I'm curious how it turns out. On the other hand, there's something on the agenda that we have not talked about at all that's really interesting. And I apologize for not bringing it to your awareness before, but this complete streets provision, a new ordinance that would require complete streets to be the guiding philosophy of the city of Pensacola. And if you're not familiar with the term, I know people who are in urban design are really familiar with it. If you're not familiar with the term, the basic idea of it is a complete street is as opposed to an automobile street, if you want to think of it that way. There are so many, like Escambia County in general, and Pensacola, of course, is, what's the word I want? Terrible for pedestrians and bicyclists. Terrible. There are so many streets that have, you know, there's no bike lane, there's no shoulder, there's no sidewalk, there's 45 miles an hour of near-death experience or next to grass. That's your alternative. And that is not good for what they call multi-mobility or multimodal transportation. That's when you're using other kinds of transportation, like bicycles, like being a pedestrian. Okay, so we know that. And there's some parts that are better than others, and we're kind of working on it. But generally speaking, Escambia County is terrible for this kind of stuff. So complete streets is the idea that you design streets with, in mind, an equal serving of the needs of pedestrians, bicyclists, micro-mobility, you know, scooters, okay, seniors. It says seniors and older persons. I don't know why they're both in here, but it does. Public transportation users, so that'd be buses. Children, youth, and families. So it's kind of everybody's going to get their share of the concern when you're designing a street. And it does allow for and trees, you know, green space, street markings to make the streets more pretty. I mean, it's a complete street. Just the reason they call it that is because it's a comprehensive approach to thinking about streets for the whole community rather than for the automobile. Now, this is going to require that the city, it specifically says, the city shall work towards developing an integrated and connected multimodal transportation system of complete streets serving all neighborhoods. Toward this end, the city adopts the following requirements. Wherever possible, all the people mentioned above, their needs need to be accommodated. And they want to create a network of interconnected and continuous bike pedestrian zones so that you can bike safely throughout the whole area or walk safely throughout the whole area. I mean, there's all kinds of places where getting from here to there you can't do without going through an unsafe intersection or crossing a street or whatever. And it's designed to create interconnecting networks for not just cars, but for everybody. Okay, that's all fine. Okay, I mean, as a goal, that's wonderful, right? What's the cost? Well, the cost is you need wider streets, you need more space. Now, some of the stuff we're doing like on Cervantes, you know, it's going to be a street diet, which means, or a road diet, which means it's going to be narrowing and slowing, and it'll allow you to create space. But if you have so many feet available for lanes in either direction, and then you say, okay, you got to also have bike lanes, for example, or you got to also have sidewalks, And now you have issues. Then you've got to have ramps down for wheelchairs, or you've got to have railings for people who are infirm or elderly. And I guess various kinds of safety devices for children. I mean, when you start adding all of this in, that street lighting, it's a much more costly way to do roads, but it's meant more for everybody. Now, the exemptions, and it does have exemptions, it says that if the cost would be prohibitive, or if it's not our roadway, or like, you know, you don't need to worry about having vehicles go through a pedestrian area, obviously, because they can't travel that way, or if you don't think that the needs of the road are going to have that much, say, bicycle demand or pedestrian demand, you know, if you could create, like, east-west roads that were sometimes designed for cars and then a different east-west route that was designed to handle the bikes and then you wouldn't have to have the road handle the bikes and the people because the road's handling the cars and the bikes and the people have another way to go. That's kind of the idea. And if it would be disproportionate or excessively costly to do something like this based on the needs over the next 20 years. So there are opt-outs. You know, there's asterisks on this. Here's my, like, overall take. I think this is a very interesting thing. I am mostly concerned about the cost and also how much will it actually get used? Because even though, and I said it already during this segment, I will complain as loudly as anybody that our streets are terrible for bicyclists and pedestrians. They just are. Even I acknowledge that if you build it for bikes and pedestrians, how much does it get used? You can overbuild with the design of having every street be usable by somebody in a wheelchair, somebody on a tricycle, somebody on a micro-mobility scooter, somebody who's taking public transportation. But then what you wind up doing is spend an awful lot of money and taking up an awful lot of land to create a thing that doesn't really get used that much. It winds up laying fallow, essentially, and then you have to maintain it. And I think if you look around, and I know this from experience, if you look around in the places even where we have sidewalks and bike lanes and things like that, they're nice to have, but they don't really get used all that much. Now, the advocates will say, that's because they're not there. And when people get into the habit of using them instead of driving everywhere, they will get more use. Maybe. But it's cost in the short run in the hopes of a cultural change in the long run. And how eager are we all to get out of our cars? I don't know. I love Ciclovia. I love bicycling. Not a big fan of walking. Takes too long. Would this be helpful? I will see. But that's kind of that's the issue. That's what they're going to be talking about at City Council tonight. And so if that kind of stuff is interesting to you, and that's why I bring it to your attention, because they're going to be voting on this first reading of this ordinance tonight. 716 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Yeah, and taking a look at southbound Garson Point Bridge now, it appears to be pretty slow moving as you're getting off the hump, it appears, so expect those delays. Not really seeing any accidents right now. If you're traveling eastbound and westbound on Gulf Breeze Parkway, it is moving a little slower trying to get to Garson Point Bridge. And as you're going northbound on Avalon Boulevard, I am seeing some delays as you're trying to approach I-10, backed up around the area of the Avalon Landing RV Park. Southbound also showing delays going towards I-10, backed up to Del Monte Street. 9 Mile Road showing delays as you are going eastbound on 9 Mile, trying to get to the Navy Federal Complex, backed up to Beulah Road, and the front gate of NAS Pensacola still delayed, not backed up to Gulf Beach Highway anymore, though, but we are seeing delays still around Sunset Avenue. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
So let's say you decide to open a restaurant. Do you open a restaurant because you love payroll, HR, and insurance, or do you open a restaurant because you love food? I mean, obviously, you love food and you love making it for people. Let's say you open a plumbing operation. You're going to go help people with their. Do you do that because you love payroll and HR and insurance benefits? Or do you do it because, you know, you feel a need and you're good at mechanical stuff and you want to help people solve a problem? I mean, this is true for any business. Nobody goes into business in order to solve insurance benefit questions and HR and payroll, except the folks at Torgerson Causey, because that actually is their business. So here's the deal. If you own a company, which means you provide benefits and you deal with HR and payroll, you know you don't like that stuff. I know you don't like that stuff. Torgerson Causey knows you don't like that stuff. They can help with it. That's literally what they do. Their business is to help you run your business and do the thing that you got into business to do. So get a free estimate today. Get them to talk with you about your options, to review it. No obligations, obviously. 20 years serving local businesses. Torgerson Causey, 433-9996 or online at tcbenefitsgroup.com.
This is where you hear news first.
Since taking office in January, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons has reopened precincts.
Live, local, all day.
In Molino and Perdido. And he tells News Radio it would be nice to have even more locations around the county.
We're a very spread out community. We're working towards getting more precincts. But as you said, it requires that because we're such a big county.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Of what had long been called long COVID, but actually what that really is post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2 infection, which we're now referring to as PASC, or P-A-S-C.
Long COVID, let's just, when you start adding new acronyms, Anthony Fauci talking during the White House coronavirus, it's not the coronavirus task force, what is it, the COVID-19 response team, I think, is they retitled it under Biden, because complete break with the past. You know, they don't want to have anything hanging over from the Trump administration, but okay. So Fauci yesterday was talking during the presser about the symptoms of this PASC, or what people had previously called long COVID.
The symptoms of this include fatigue, shortness of breath, sleep disorders, fevers, GI symptoms, anxiety and depression, and what some have been referring to as brain fog, or an inability or a difficulty in concentrating or focusing. Remember, these are post-acute sequelae after the virus essentially has been cleared from the body.
I mean, it's some really concerning stuff. And I had read, it's been a while, but I read one article that was indicating that the theory going had been that it, maybe it was a news report on TV, I don't know, that the theory going was that somehow COVID like sort of hides in your neural connections, like it's in your nerve cells or something, you know, then that's why it's having some of these effects, and that's why it seems to come back after time.
Most recently, in a study from the University of Washington that appeared just a few days ago, it was found really now something alarming, that approximately 30% of the patients who were enrolled at the University of Washington reported persistent symptoms for as long as 9 months after illness. Fatigue was the most common reported symptom, and persistent symptoms were reported by 1/3 of outpatients with mild disease.
Good Lord. Ugh. I'll tell you, I know a lot of people have kind of had the idea, even including myself, like, just get it and be done with it, you know, because most people don't have serious complications and most people survive. But I'll tell you, the more I hear about some of these, you know, weird, uncertain long-term consequences, you know, I can't afford brain fog. I've got enough fatigue getting 4 hours of sleep a night that I don't need anything helping me in that regard. 7:23 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, I got a text in from a good friend who's a planner architect. He says, and we're talking about the complete streets, he says, most efforts to apply complete streets ideology do not expand street widths. Typically, the road was already designed too wide anyway and for too high a speed, so the cost is typically minimal. And what he's getting at there is that you can get all of the features in by taking it out of the existing footprint of the road and changing it to be more appropriate. Citizens adopting workability and bicycling doesn't happen overnight. It'll get used, but it's a gradual year-by-year kind of use. And then he was appreciative that we were talking about this. I love that. 7:23 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Moderna is testing a COVID-19 booster shot to protect people from the South African variant. The drug company found their current two-dose vaccine is not as effective against the COVID mutation from South Africa. Congress to take up the January 6th Capitol insurrection again today. House Financial Services Committee focusing on the economic impact as well as policing and security measures at the Capitol. An American Airlines flight from Cincinnati to Phoenix. When this happens over New Mexico.
Have any targets up here? We just had something go right over the top of us that, I hate to say this, looked like a long cylindrical object. It almost looked like a cruise missile type of thing moving really fast that went right over the top of us.
American Airlines says that radio transmission recorded by a blogger is authentic, but said any further questions would need to be directed to the FBI or maybe the Space Force. I don't know, but
The FBI, known for its forthcoming public communiques about potential alien objects.
Well, it was over New Mexico.
Man, no. You know, I would rather believe it was like a joke. That's what I would rather believe, but I don't think it was. I just don't know what to think. I don't know. Yeah, of course, we did recently land the thing on Mars.
Yeah. I don't know.
Hey, you know. Okay, so
who says they can't land something here?
Right. I mean, you know. Right. So we're off in like total wingnut territory here, but I have long been a subscriber to the view that as a race, mm-hmm. we are idiots. To be sending out into space
here we are.
The radio transmission that says, hey, we're here.
We're here. We don't know anything.
Why? Why invite trouble?
Come get us.
Because anybody that's out there that you're going to reach that has the ability to receive it, guess what? They may have more ability than we have. And I think we've seen enough movies to know that they're not always on our side.
Independence Day?
I know.
Come on.
Stop it. Just stop it. All right, Mark, thanks for the update. Davis Allen, time for traffic on the fives.
Yeah, it's Garson Point Bridge going southbound. Before you even get to the hump, it's very delayed trying to get into Gulf Breeze, so just be ready to pack your patience over there. Going northbound, we're seeing some minor delays getting backed up around the area of the toll plaza. It is backed up onto the bridge, but not too far. Now, as you're getting on Avalon Boulevard, it's not too bad going northbound. Southbound's actually more delayed if you're trying to leave Highway 90 going towards I-10. It's backed up over by Moore's Oak Drive. Gulf Breeze Parkway going eastbound. Traffic is backed up to the Winn-Dixie Bell's parking lot. Being that I have family over there, they say that normally it takes 20 to 30 minutes where they get caught up in there trying to get to Garson. So, now as you're traveling along I-10 and I-110, it is checking and clear, but just keep in mind that 9 Mile Road is delayed if you're going towards Navy Federal eastbound over in Beulah. I'm Davis Allen with the traffic on the fives.
White sandy beaches, sunset on the coast. Beautiful, wonderful, enjoying it with your sweetie, maybe drinking some champagne. Now, what if you could do all of that, but 1,000 feet up in the air flying along the coast at sunset? I know. I mean, like, you know how when you've seen a sunrise or a sunset from the air, it's different. Well, that's what Captain Eric says. You know, I'm always talking about Southeast Air Shuttle as this service for you business folks, or even if you're getaway for the weekend. But there's something even simpler. You just want a really memorable, unique, romantic experience. Call them and book them for a sunset champagne cruise along the beach. They can do that. He can take care of you. And it's wonderful. You and your sweetie sitting in the backseat sipping champagne and just watching it for an hour on a Friday or a Saturday. Southeast Air Shuttle, your no-line airline where you can fly when you want, not when you're told, and more importantly, even how you want, quite frankly. FlySoutheast.com. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the library. Did you see this story about the University of Michigan?
Yes. This is bad. My nightmare.
The University of Michigan, one of the libraries there, they have shut it down now for 2 days because staff discovered, no big deal, Mediterranean recluse spiders living in the Shapiro undergrad library at Ann Arbor. Oh, my God. It's a relative of the brown recluse. So, you know, the bite can cause symptoms ranging from minor skin irritation to tissue death. Come to the library. Check out a book. Get some tissue death. So they've closed the library down temporarily to try to scrub it and clean it and, you know, make it safe for everybody. Apparently, they like caves and dark places. And it's probably not going to kill you. Probably not going to kill you. But, okay. You know, Davis, what this reminds me of is this is why I don't go to the library. You know,
you got to avoid the library.
That's exactly right. Oh, my goodness. Did that give you the creeps when you saw that story, though? Honestly,
it did. Just because spiders and snakes, we don't get along.
Yeah, I understand. You know, we lived in Oregon where they had black widows and black widows like in the house, in the eaves. No, that's the thing. We survive. Mark Jacobs, what do you got coming up, sir?
I don't like spiders. Isn't that a Tom T. Hall song, I think? I don't like spiders and snakes. Okay, well, I don't either.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Good morning.
Hey, good to have you. And first, before we get started on other stuff, is there anything, any incidents or events that have happened the last day or two that we don't already know about?
No, sir. It's been quiet.
Well, I'll take it. I will always take that. Now, we did have a bit of an unsettling discovery the other day over on the east side of town in the water. Some folks were out at the park and they discovered a body in the water, which I guess we have now identified, but we're still looking for more information about how she got there. Is that right?
Yes, we do know that it was a 61-year-old female, but we're waiting on autopsy results to come back to find out exactly what caused the death.
Okay, and this was, I have in my head that it was at Bay Bluffs, but it was at Bay Bluffs Chimney Park. Where was it at?
It was near Manalay, off Scenic Highway down on the beach.
Okay.
That's a little bit north of where you're talking about.
Okay, I imagine the folks who discovered it, very unsettling. You know, I just, because we always go down there with Ocean Hour to clean up the beach and just to, you know, be walking along and to find, obviously it's a sad thing to have her pass away, but distressing to find it as well, right?
Yeah, it is. It's something that you don't ever want to see. But, fortunately, somebody found her as quick as they did, for her sake and for that of the family.
Absolutely. Turning out of the statewide news, the attorney general yesterday put forward the notion that we'd raise the payout for information leading to a murder case being closed, almost doubling the amount of money. I think it was from $5,000 to $9,500. I'm going on memory. I had it in my notes, but I think that's the right amount. You work very closely, like with Crime Stoppers, so you're pretty well familiar with all of this stuff. Is that something, like, are we having the need to incentivize it more, and do you think that would make a difference?
I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. The higher you can go on the reward, the better, always. Ms. Moody came to our conference last week in Tallahassee and spoke to us about that, about what her plans were, and increasing it can never hurt anything. But what we want, our biggest problem in Crime Stoppers sometimes is the fact that people wait with information thinking that the reward will go up, where Crime Stoppers, our bylaws, that's not allowed. We pay the same for every crime throughout the state, and it's done on a point system. And for somebody to think, well, I've got this information, I know it's good, I'm just going to wait and see how big that reward gets, they're wasting time doing that. So we want to make sure that people know that the faster you call, I mean, you're going to make more money. If you hold that information, that's not going to help you out at all. You're going to get the same amount.
What happens if, now I have 1,000 questions I'm curious about. Is it a total amount of money assigned per the criminal event that then gets divvied up among, like, if multiple people come forward with information? I imagine some tips are crucial, some tips are a little bit helpful. How does that all work out in the payoffs?
It's the first person that calls gets that reward. Now, sometimes we'll have two people call, they both have good information, and they both have pieces of the puzzle that we needed. And in that case, we can pay a reward to each of them.
And it's of the full amount, or do they split it, like, because it's only so much per crime?
That it will be split.
Okay. So there's a system, and basically first good tip gets the reward, and then if there happens to be an odd situation where it justifies it, you might split it. But generally speaking, you're trying to incentivize people to come forward with their big information quickly, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, Andrew, sometimes there's confusion. Private people can make rewards of their own, and they can make that as high as they want and pay whatever they want for that crime. But Crime Stoppers has to keep that separated. To make sure there's no confusion there. We have a certain amount that we pay for a homicide. It's the same throughout the state. And we have another amount that we pay for maybe a burglary of a car, and it's paid the same throughout the state. So we have to stick to that in order to make sure everybody, the rewards are paid out equally and fairly.
And by the way, just because, we are talking about it, let's make sure that we remind people that when they call Crime Stoppers, that is, it's not just that it is totally anonymous, it's that it has to be anonymous. In other words, if somehow you inform them of your identity, you actually become ineligible to receive the money, right?
That is correct. We can no longer, we can speak to you and we can take the information, but you are no longer able to get a reward at that point because we have to keep you anonymous. That's what the program's all about. And people have messed up before and given that information and didn't even realize what they said. And it's awful hard to explain to them that they're not going to be able to get a reward, but we can still take the information.
But again, that's to protect people's anonymity and the program itself being able to have that reputation of, we will not ask you, and you should, there will be no need to get give any. In fact, you can't give it for that exact reason. We're talking to Mike Wood. He is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. I know you and I often talk about the Citizens Police Advisory Committee and some of the questions that come up from that. One of the questions is this idea that if the SWAT team is going to be deployed due to some incident, that the response is going to be more robust or less robust based on where they're going, neighborhoods. And so people perceive a higher militarized response because they live in a poor or maybe a black area. But how does that actually work? Is it always the same? Is it proportional to the neighborhood? Is there any truth to that allegation?
No, not at all. The SWAT teams have protocols that they use, and we respond based on the information that we have. If a person has a warrant and no history of violent behavior, no history of firearms, or no information of firearms, you respond one way. But I can promise you that if we know that that person has firearms, they're willing to use them, we will respond to that location the same, no matter where it is in town, whether it's someplace on the west side or if it's in Cordova Park or you're going to get the exact same response.
Yeah, because you just don't train for response by neighborhood. You train for response by incident type. That's the real key, right?
Yes, that's correct.
We're talking to Mike Wood, public information officer for PPD. Mike, hang on for me for just a second. Let me take a quick traffic on the fives with Davis Allen.
Yeah, and still seeing delays along Garcon Point Bridge. In fact, as you're going southbound, it's backed up all the way to Avalon Boulevard. It does appear. Going northbound, you're going to be met with delays along Garcon after you get off the hump, and it's going to continue to remain a little slow until you get on through the toll plaza. Now, Avalon Boulevard going northbound, I am seeing delays around Sanchez Court and also seeing some delays going southbound around Garcon Point Road. So just use caution. Expect delays over there. Also seeing delays along 9 Mile Road eastbound in front of Navy Federal, backed up to Beulah Road and Highway 29 southbound between 9 Mile and I-10. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Very good. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Davis, back to Mike Wood with the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, you know, the governor has recently reduced made it more available the vaccinations to people 50 years and up who are teachers or are police officers. There was a bit of a halting start to this originally as the cops were getting it, and then I guess you were not getting it. Fire, same thing. You guys now are able. Are the officers vaccinated, all vaccinated, some vaccinated? How's that going?
Some are vaccinated. There were some of us that went and got it the first day that it was available, and I was one of those. And then you have other officers that have elected not to do it. And it's not just COVID. It was this way with the flu shot, too. I mean, before we're police officers, we're human beings, and we all analyze and think about things such as vaccinations independently. And the city and the police department is not forcing the officers to get the vaccine. So it's totally up to them.
All right. Very good. I know you and I have talked about this many times, but the gun buy program the city of Pensacola is going to vote on final details of tonight. I know it's not a policy that you are implementing, but it is a policy that you are going to be putting into practice. I guess you're not voting for it, but you are implementing, I suppose, a better way to say it. Are you guys already making plans for this? What is this going to look like when people actually come to Bill Gregory Park, assuming that this passes?
Well, they'll bring the weapon with them, and the first thing that we want to do is make sure that weapon is unloaded and safe, and then we will take possession of it, and ultimately that weapon will get destroyed. We hope it's successful, and you'll know if it is or not by the amount of weapons that they get and how much money goes out. Whether that program is ultimately successful or not, that's, again, it's we'll never know. If it gets one or two weapons off the street that could have killed a small child in a home, then yeah, it was worth it. But again, we'll never know the full extent of whether it works or not.
Obviously, yeah. And I know that we're trying to, you know, the whole idea is to reduce violence. But I'll tell you, as a gun owner, I'm the kind of guy that looks at that pile of beautiful guns and thinks, oh, you know. And I think, would there be some collectible item in there? You know, somebody brings in a Tommy gun or something like that. You know, I go, oh no, you have to destroy it. No. One of the other questions that I wanted to ask you about is kind of a cool thing. You've got a new book out on Pensacola police history, right?
Yeah, Sergeant Mike Simmons is a historian. It's an unofficially historian, but he's really good, and he's been studying that department for many years, knows exactly what he's talking about, done a lot of research, and he's got that book for sale. He recently did a book signing at the police department. A lot of good information in there, and even somebody that's been there as long as I have had no idea how old that the police department actually was, and that, you know, the documents and photographs and things like that. So, yeah, it's a good read.
I like it. I look forward to being able to see it. You often have a cop myth for me that we can debunk. There are so many. This is a target-rich environment that you see in movies and TV. Do you have one for me this week?
Yeah, let's talk about the show CSI, Miami, Los Angeles, New Orleans. In that show, excuse me, it looks as if the crime scene analysts are the detectives, and they run down the case and they make the arrest, and that's just simply not the way it is in larger departments. Now, smaller departments, the patrol officer does everything. He's the patrol officer. He's the crime scene investigator. He's the detective. But most of the time, our crime scene people are just that. They are specialists in that area. They go to crime scenes. They collect and document evidence. They're very good at what they do, and then they forward that the information that they have to investigators, and investigators go and investigate that case and ultimately make an arrest. So it's usually in most larger departments, it's two different sections of folks that investigate that crime scene.
So the dashing detective / CSI / prosecutor, the hybrid amalgam of all these different roles in real life, it's the crime scene person over here and the detective over there. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the crime scene investigators in police departments around the country are civilians, are highly trained civilians. Uh-huh. The Pensacola Police Department is one of the few that our investigators, our crime scene technicians, are actually sworn police officers.
Hey, you give me another question, and I'm just kind of curious since we're talking about it. The picture on TV is that when a murder happens, that you immediately call the homicide detectives, and the homicide detectives show up at the scene. Does that happen?
Well, we have investigators that are on call, and they do it all. They investigate everything. And, you know, you have some that investigate homicides most of the time, but and gun crimes and property crimes and persons crimes and some things like that. But our investigators, they can do it all.
No.
It just sometimes depends on who is end up assigned that case.
No, I mean specifically, like I know the CSIs come, but do the detectives even go to the site, to the scene?
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Okay. So there's some truth. Hey, we found something TV does right about your job.
Yeah, that's right.
Mike Wood.
But yeah, they're just...
Mike is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the good information. Thanks for the time, and thanks for doing what you do. We appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
You bet. 751 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, I'm Bobby Rossi. Coming up at 5:50, President Biden is going to attack methane gases. Well, that stinks for Pennsylvania.
Bobby Rossi, 4 till 7 today on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
I'm roaming my hand now and wondering what dress to wear now.
Well,
I say a little
prayer for you.
7:54, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Good morning. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Weekly jobless claims falling. Labor Department says 730,000 initial claims last week, a drop of 111,000 from the week before. Investigators haven't yet pulled information from the so-called black box in the SUV that golf star Tiger Woods was driving when he crashed Tuesday morning, but they are in possession of it.
We're told that investigators have now retrieved what's called an event data recorder. That's essentially his SUV's black box, and it could contain critical details like the vehicle's speed, whether inattention was a factor in that crash as well.
That's NBC's Craig Melvin. Sacha Baron Cohen says he's done playing Borat, telling Entertainment Tonight it got too dangerous filming his hit movies. That's, of course, his character runs around pranking people who don't know they're being filmed, and it got a little dangerous for him.
I guess he's not the king in the castle anymore.
No.
All right. Mark, thanks for the update. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, this is good news, especially if you're a fan of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or even a Tom Brady fan. It's at least trending in the right way that Tom Brady might even sign a contract extension. He does have 1 year left on his deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The reigning Super Bowl champion is 43 years old. He'd be 44 come next year. He says he wants to play until 45, and the Bucs certainly want him to stick around. Also, the WGC Workday Championship, it's at the concession in Bradenton, Florida. It's getting underway today. Bubba Watson teeing off around noon. And now rolling this from sports into traffic, I did receive a report that once again we are seeing delays at the front gate of NAS Pensacola, and for a brief moment they were not allowing anybody onto base, although I'm not seeing too extensive of delays, so hopefully they're now starting to allow people back on. I am still seeing delays on Garcon Point Bridge going southbound, starting almost now to Garcon Point Road. This is just going to continue all the way until you get into Gulf Breeze, so just hang tough. It is going to take you a little while, probably more than 30 minutes. If you're going northbound, you're going to be met with delays as you're getting off the hump of the bridge, and they're going to continue till you get through Garcon Point Road. And frankly, they're also going to go, you're probably going to be met with delays once again as you're trying to get through Mary Kitchens Road as well. It does appear to be delayed in that area. Also, on Highway 90 through East Milton, it appears that as you're going westbound towards downtown Milton, it is backed up over there around the area of Johnson Road, almost toward Basin Road and 9 Mile Road. We've been seeing delays going eastbound in front of the Navy Federal Complex, backing up all the way to Beulah Road. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
So, you know, when Christina Leavenworth said she was going to go from news into doing real estate, those of us who know her were like, well, you could probably do it, but I hope it works, you know, because you never know. 3 years into it, selling 130 homes last year, it's kind of working. She knows how to do it. She and her team at Levin Ranke Realty have really gotten this down to a science. In fact, she said, you know, the original thing, we've been saying this for a while, was she would agree that if you and she came to a price agreement about the house to sell, that if she agreed to that price, she'd get it sold in 30 days or she wouldn't charge you a seller's commission, which is a pretty good deal. She's telling me now, look, Andrew, that's still on the table, but to be honest, it's like 7 days. I mean, we sell homes. They almost always sell in 7 days. And, you know, sell a home for 3 offers in a day, and then it's above list price. Sell another home by the mall for 8 offers in a day. It's crazy. Now, you have to do it right. You have to stage it. You have to set it. You have to take the right pictures. You have to know where to promote it. You have to promote it effectively. You got to answer the phone. You got to follow up. I mean, you got to do all that stuff. And they know how to do that really well. But the short version is, if you want to sell a home and get really good money for it, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Ranke Realty can do that for you. 723-9158. 723-9158. 759 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You haven't heard me talk much about these allegations of sexual harassment against Governor Cuomo. Can't stand the man, think he's wrong, thinks he did some really bad things during the COVID crisis. I'm always cautious about these allegations. That's why I don't talk a lot about it. People need to be able to make their allegations. They need to be vetted and heard, but I don't take sides initially just on allegations.